BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K. BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K. BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K.
You're listening to BSing with Sean K on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, Sean Neese, and on this show, I talk with people who live outside the box and provide a platform for opinions and perspectives not often heard in the mainstream media. And in this episode, I'll play you a conversation I had with Pamela Kramer. She's a casting director, producer, energetic body healer, and intuitive medium. She's been working in the entertainment industry for over 25 years. She is the founder of Bradley Baron, and she casts for film and television as well as hundreds of commercials, industrials, and voiceovers. And she teaches a 4-week horror acting intensive at Actors Connection in New York, New York. It's the only class of its kind in the country. And I met her through taking this intensive. And I took this intensive because I had been doing a lot of improv and I've done some comedic acting. And then I acted in a short dramatic film as well. And I wanted to learn another genre acting, horror acting. And also the class taught you how to die in a scene too, like how to act that out in an authentic way. And the intensive was called Dying for the Camera. And like I said earlier, she's a psychic medium and a spiritual healer. She offers private sessions with clients, and the best way to contact her about that is on her website, PamelaSKramer.com. Without giving away too much more, here's the conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. First off, just tell us about yourself and what you do as a casting director, and I guess a bit about how we met, too, in the horror class you teach, too.
Yeah, which way do you want to start? Those are like three questions.
Well, let's start with the horror class, because we met in the horror class.
So. Yeah, okay, all right. So we just go into it?
Yeah.
Okay. So we met in the horror film class. What year was that? Was it last year?
Last year, yeah.
So that's 2019?
Yes, October.
Okay, great. Yeah, so, the horror film class, this is our 10th year. So I started it in 2010. And do you want me to tell you how I created it?
Yeah, we could go into that. Yeah.
Okay, great. You and I met back in 2019. You said October. And so I created the horror film class back in 2010. You know, I hadn't... there was a lot of stuff going on at the time, and my dear friend Tony Nation, who is one of the managing partners at Actors Connection in New York City, had been asking me to teach something, and I, you know, due to my schedule, I kept on saying no, no, no. Anyhow, in 2009 is when the shift in the industry and started to happen, especially the industrial corporate industry arena, which is where I was making at the time. The bulk of my casting work was coming from industrials, which is training tapes, both internally and externally, commercials and voiceovers. And what they were doing, the big corporations were laying off people by the droves, and I found myself in a really bad situation. That work was drying up in that area, and I had put a lot of my eggs in that particular basket. So never thinking it would affect me, it did. And so after 2 or 3 days of just laying down in a ball, my max is 3 days. I give myself 3 days to curl in a ball, try to figure things out, suck my thumb and all that stuff. And I got up and I called my friend Tony Nation, and I told him I wanted to teach something. But not the usual acting classes. I needed something that was really creative, and especially where my mind was at the time. So Tony had reminded me that I had a background in horror film, and I said, "Well, that's great. And I ran away and I came back with the horror film class that I teach today. And it is not only the one of a kind in the tri-state area, it's one of a kind in the country. I mean, there have been people that tried to teach a class like this, but they quickly disappear. This class, for me, on a personal level, it saved me. It got my creative juices going, and by focusing in on this class, the creativity, you know, started coming back in my life. And in other words, it gave me back my life because I was totally thrown. And by giving me this creative juice and teaching this class, it just it brought about so many other doors opening for me, and not only for me, but for many people. So it redirected everything for me. So in essence, this class is a personal, it's personal for me and what it has done for me. And I've seen over the past 10 years how it's changed other people's lives. You know, I know we're going to get into this later on, you know, from the healing aspect. And people have said to me, if you're a healer, why, how is it you teach a class like this? And really my answer is, it's a very healing class. And please, you know, let me know what your thoughts are. You know, I felt, I feel that this class teaches you how to get out of your own comfort zone. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say that. I know that some of the times when I kind of did a comical, even though it was like a horror scene, I know that some of the things I did came off kind of comical, like even when I played the psycho. Like, so I don't know. Like, I know that the my scenes made people laugh, even though they weren't supposed to always make people laugh. But I was, because I was supposed to be more scary, especially for like the Hills Have Eyes scene that I did, where I did like the wider eyes and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. But definitely, I think I got out of my comfort zone. I guess I'd want to maybe, yeah. The one thing is maybe I could have learned maybe more to be like scarier in certain ways rather than making the scene kind of comical. When it wasn't meant to be comical, even though I didn't intend to make it comical, it just kind of came out that way at times.
Well, that's another reason. When the class started, it was a 6-week course, and I mean, I personally feel it should be a 10 to 12 week course. And there's a lot that goes into this class, as you know. I mean, you're not only learning, various scenes, and you're also learning what horror films are and what they're not, and looking at the genre from all different aspects. People just think it's blood and guts, but it is comedy, it is horror, it is the unnerving. It provokes the deepest and the darkest fears, but it also brings out the, you know, that roller coaster ride. You know, people go on roller coaster rides to be scared, but it's exhilarating. It really it gives you so much more than you think it is. A lot of, some people say, oh, I'm afraid of horror films, that's why I don't want to take this class. And I say, well, this is why you should take this class. So it gets you out of that comfort zone. You know, I mean, that's something, you know, for me, that's my first response to that. Now, the course, unfortunately, is down to 4 weeks. And again, I do want to go into this with you later, is that, you know, the industry has changed a lot. People don't have attention spans. And the dedication that came from when I was coming up, you know, I'm classically trained singer, dancer, actress. I didn't just roll out of bed and decide to be all these other things that we're discussing. It's been my entire life. And coming from hardcore theater, and really trained and really dedicated by, you know, dedicated teachers. Like my mentor was Jack Romano. Dr. Jack Romano was an incredible human being. He was my private coach, and he was my mentor. And I never stopped learning from him. And I just gave everything in, you know, gave it over to him and listened. Today, the attention span is different. And because the attention span is different, people just can't sit still. They don't focus. They're looking at their phones. They're, you know, it's not their fault. It's just, unfortunately, it's the conditioning of where we're at. And so we're seeing a tremendous amount of effects of that, not only in the entertainment field, but in everyday life. So going back to the horror film class, I brought it down to 4 weeks, and I cram a lot of stuff in 4 weeks. But having said that, there are no levels in this class, and actors have come back time and time again. And it's really me who has to find the challenging scenes for them. So I'm the one on the weekends, you know, transcribing or looking for a scene for that individual actor. And so it's not just, you know, you're talking about we should have done a little bit more, you know, scarier stuff. Well, you know, you innately are very funny. And so exploring that aspect of yourself before you start to really explore the darker side of yourself within these characters, and that takes time. I mean, you can do that. And you are naturally funny. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I get what it is. You really would like to dive deep into the darker side. But the darker side is more subtle. But I'd rather have you be bigger on the onset site so I can see where you're at. But yeah, it's come back, Sean. Come back and play again.
Yeah, because I was doing a lot of improv and improv acting. I did some comedic short film, and I wanted to explore like the more dramatic or like a different genre of acting. So that's why I took that class. But there's, like you said, there's a lot of comedy and horror too. Like even like Jack Nicholson in The Shining, even though that was like a very like scary, dark film, like he was definitely humorous in his role a bit when he played the psycho. Well, the guy who went psycho because he was in the hotel.
Yeah, but for you, Sean, I would say to you that the stillness of your acting, of the characters you create, if you find the stillness, that's where you're going to find the most disturbing twists and turns within your performance. And, you know, everything takes time. It's kind of like a closet that's messy. You have to empty the closet and then put it back, you know, in order. So everything gets very messy for a while. But for you, I would say finding the stillness, the silences, is what's going to really change your performance and give you what you're looking for in finding the darker parts of the characters.
Like focusing more on the inner, I guess is what you're saying?
Well, the silence, I encourage being over the top in many of our exercises for a reason, and one of those reasons is to get you out of your comfort zone, and what I just said about the closet, you have to pull everything out of the closet and, you know, let it be messy. The whole room is messy on the outside, then you put it back. So it's you know, you don't want to start with the subtle nuances of something like in this genre without understanding the whole picture of what it is. And so for you, I'll make this answer for you, is that the silences are really, I mean, you don't have to push it. For example, you know, I said, open up your eyes. Now, you're just discovering how to use your face in that. You're not even discovering the character or putting on the skins of the character. You're discovering what it does on the external side. Now, if you were to pull back and just keep the stillness on the inside and allow your eyes to widen and allow your eyes to darken, if you will, then you're going to find there's, you know, many, many stages of unsettled energy coming right through to the audience.
Yeah, and I guess the one scene I did, though, was more just like over the top, I guess, because I guess it wasn't a way to do more stillness with The Hills Have Eyes.
No, because The Hills Have Eyes, if you take the original Hills Have Eyes, you know, it it was the first time that, that we had seen such characters like this. And it's so when you see any kind of quote-unquote oddity, it looks like bigger than life. And in essence, these were just regular people. If they were Martians and they were running around the desert, speaking their own language, but you didn't know their language, so you had to try to figure out their language. You follow that thought?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it has its challenges. But how do you parlay that in a short period of time? Well, it's what you know, as you know about acting, it's 50% of what you know through experience, and the other 50% is from what you create and through fantasy. You know, it's kind of like, I know we're going to get into that later. It's like when I get visions through my energy work, you know, if I never saw a giraffe and I'm seeing a vision of a horse with long neck, I'm going to say, I see a horse with a long neck. It's the same thing if you look at acting. If you don't have that reference, how do you get there? How do you interpret that? So it takes a while. So I would say it's research and understanding more of the subtleties of what's going on in the background of each character. You know, as you know, the five W's in acting, as I'm sure, I know you studied acting, you know, so doing your research, and you have to make quick decisions when you go into some of these auditions. You don't always have the luxury to do homework. And to my understanding, and from the casting director's point of view, I try to give as much information to actors when it comes to character breakdowns as possible. And unfortunately, actors don't get enough information on breakdowns, so you have to get on your toes and you know, be on your toes and create and bring that to the table. So if you don't have that experience of being a mutant out in the desert somewhere, you have to take a leap of faith that that's who you are, not something that, oh, that's kind of weird. Okay, how do I play a mutant? Well, mutants believe that they're just regular people, you know, so what do? Do they eat? Do they, you know, do they go to the bathroom? What do they do? So, I mean, so there's a lot of, you have a lot of commonality. You start with the commonality and then you start working into what your differences are, if that's clear enough.
Yeah, and I guess, and with a villain too, this kind of relates to what you were saying. Like, no villain views themselves as the villain. There's always a reason why they're doing what they do. And I was just thinking of Cersei from Game of Thrones. Like, she did a lot of bad things, but it was all because she thought she was protecting her family, so she had to be ruthless.
Mm-hmm. But she wasn't viewing herself as being ruthless. That was her survival. So there was, you know, there's a lot of what was the saying I heard? You're always a villain in someone's story. And I thought that was really interesting. No matter how good you are, you're still a villain in someone else's story. So that was something interesting to ponder.
How did you get started as a casting director?
Okay. Well, in the very early stages of cable television, when no one knew if cable would be anything, let alone what it is today, I went down to the local cable station and asked the head of the network down there. It was a local branch in New Jersey, if they would use my acting students in their commercials. And back then they paid either nothing or up to like $75 if you were lucky. But that, you know, I didn't care about that. I wanted my students to get more experience and other than in my class. So from there, I reached out to other casting directors that were working in major films. And I was putting my students in there, you know, somewhere like up to, you know, 50 to a few hundred of my students as extras in big name films. You'll never see my name in those credits because that's not what it was about for me. It was about getting out there. But what was happening is I was just like, I felt like I was on this bus and I was going for the ride and creating work for my students. And there were times when I was sitting behind agents or casting directors and showcases and choosing the same actors. And this is long before I realized realize how my abilities came into play. And from there, there was times where I was on the set and I would gather actors that I liked. Now, let me say I'm on the set because I'm also a makeup artist and stylist. So I still do that. But early on, I would work with actors that I liked and I would gather their photographs. And from there, I started building a trust with my corporate clients and my commercial clients. And then from there, everything just went from word of mouth. So 100% of my work as a CD and in other areas I work in are all from word of mouth. You know, that's a shorter version of it. How's that?
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess you always had an interest in the arts then.
Yes, I started in the industry at three, classically trained singer, dancer, actor. And so I was always in shows, either in my school or in local theater, and or joining groups and going out and performing for the elderly. And from there, went to college and did shows there with Summer Stock and performed in Summer Stock up in Maine. I grew up in Florida, and when I came up here, because I got a job at Stage Door Manor, which is up in the Catskills. It's the only full entertainment summer stock for kids, and kids from all over the world would go to this camp, and that's where I met my acting coach. And I went there as a camp counselor. By the end of the summer, I was teaching some classes. And in my first acting class at Stage Door Manor, I had Mary Stuart Masterson from Fried Green Tomatoes. She was 13. And John Cryer from Pretty in Pink and Two and a Half Men. And these kids they could do anything. They were just so creative. And once I left Stage Door Manor, I started teaching on my own. By that point, I was 19 years old. I remember I started when I was like 3 years old on stage. So that's when I started to teach acting. And that's got me from there, it started going from acting coaching into creating work for my students. So it just was a progression of grabbing one thing after another and pulling it all together. You know, when I came up from theater, you did everything. You know, you do stage managing and mopping the floors and running the flies and building sets and doing makeup and costumes. And nothing could, that experience is so essential to becoming a performer and an artist. And from there, you build on that. And then other things come into play, like being a casting director or a writer or a producer. It's all together. And when I was teaching acting, I was teaching acting out of my home as well. I was teaching almost seven classes at one time out of my apartment. I taught at other schools as well, but eventually in my apartment. And the way that I was trained from Dr. Jack Romano, I carried that on over to my students and added other levels. I was teaching actors the business of acting way before it was even popular. And the reason why is because I wasn't the girl next door. I was always a character actress. No matter how heavy or thin I was always a character actress. And instead of allowing the industry to direct me or dictate what I can do or what I can't do, I started creating what I can do. And that carries over in every aspect of my life.
So do you still do acting a bit, or is it mainly the coaching and teaching you do now?
I'm a casting director and a producer, and as well as I still do makeup and styling are the three major things that in the entertainment field that I do. As far as acting is concerned, when a producer that I know asks me to do a voiceover and the occasional filmmaker asks me if there's a role that I'd like to do, I'm open to it, but it's not really something I feel like I have to do because I really enjoy producing. I enjoy casting. And when I'm with my students, I enjoy all that as well. I mean, so it's, I feel you don't have to make a decision, Sean. You don't have to do one thing. You know, most people go from one career to the next. I collect my careers. I have about six careers to make one, is my, as I like to say. And so I don't, all of it is important and everything plays a part in my life. And it's not so much equal or lesser. It is what it is at the moment, you know, if you follow that train of thought.
Yeah, I think that's what's good about, you know, media and entertainment. There's always something you can be doing. You know, if you're not acting in a film, you could be producing. Well, like now I'm doing a radio show and doing an interview. I mean, there's always something different you could be working on or doing, and yeah, it doesn't hurt to be flexible. So I think that's my main goal is just to always be working in the industry full time, and I'm flexible about like what I'd be doing in it, because I guess it doesn't hurt to, you know, be skilled in one or more than one area.
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know, I love when I'm producing. There's a passion project that I've been working with two of the partners for the past several years. It's a paranormal television show, which is my passion project, and I love producing. And I'm an innate producer, and you know, I'm also very nurturing. So for me, it's like pulling these pieces together is very easy for me. It's one of my skill sets. One thing that I miss is being the student. I like being the student, you know, and that's hard. And, you know, so I continue my education, not in the entertainment field, but I continue to learn because I love to learn. And that's one thing that I feel that actors need to be in this industry, be more interesting than your career. There's nothing more boring than an actor talking about acting all the time, because if you look at successful people, they're well read, they have things to say, and it's not all about acting. You know, you have to be in life. You know, go sit on a park bench and see what the guys on Wall Street are reading, you know, and you'll see that they're not just reading about, you know, number crunching. And the same thing with actors. Yeah, read a good book on the industry. That's fine. But be interesting. You know, it's about life. Be interesting. And that brings you more opportunities. People want to work with people they like, you know. There was a stand-up comic, and I don't know his name. I was a child when the Ed Sullivan Show was out. And the story goes that the stand-up comic got that gig because he played golf with Ed Sullivan. So people want to keep people they like around. They want to work with people they like. Your talent is important, but it's also the likability factor.
I think that's why Ed Norton was fired from his role as Hulk, because people just didn't want to work with him anymore, even though he's a really good actor, that he was just too difficult to deal with on set. So they recasted him for the next films they did with Hulk and the Avengers and all that.
Yeah, and nobody wants to, no one needs to put up with that. Look, you know, as a casting director, I can't allow that pollution to go on to my client's set. And, you know, that's why I like to talk to actors and once they're booked. I like to talk to them on the phone. I like to hear what they're not saying to me. I like to go over details because I need to, there's more to just casting here. Oh yeah, you're a good actor, great audition. I go deeper than that, and I'm looking at all aspects of the person and actor when they come into my casting office or in the casting room. And sometimes it was a story. A girl came in, and she I went to give her a direction, and she said to me, "I have a better idea." I said, "Oh, please do show me your better idea." You know the story. She did not get the job. I can't pass that on to my client as someone who knows better, who thinks she knows better than the director. And, you know, so being able to play well with others is really important. And keeping in mind, you're only one piece of the puzzle. You're not the entire puzzle, you know? And we work together. You know, it comes back, going back to theater, where people work together in the theater. It's not one person. The whole team works together to create the show, you know. And I think that that is something that has really blown up in our industry, that actors, not all actors, of course, but actors in general have bought their own press. And, you know, they are disconnected. A lot of people are very disconnected. When I give lectures, I'll start with, we are in the non-communication business. And it's very sad because we're all about communicating, but nobody wants to pick up the phone. And I understand why. There's a lot of solicitors. But just in general, picking up the phone or returning phone calls, I'll call an actor, for example, and I'll get a text. No, I want you to call me. And there's a reason why I want you to call me. I need to hear your voice. I need to hear what you're not saying to me. I want to make sure that everything is clear. There are more actors not showing up to auditions more today than ever before. In the past, I want to say now 8 years, I have had more holes in my audition. And I feel it's because of the internet, because there's no connection, there's no accountability. And so when I pick up the phone and I call you or call your agent, I'm hearing what you're not saying to me. And if you hear my voice, chances are, if I say to you, so I can confirm you, yes, and you're right there on the spot saying yes, you're going to show up. 99.9% of the time, you're going to show up unless you get another booking or you know, God forbid, you get sick. But actors today blow off more auditions. I've never seen it. It's an epidemic, and it's I know it's probably shocking you.
Yeah. So. You also do work as a healer, and I know you have an interest in spirituality, too. And I read on your website that developed at a young age, too, like around 4, I guess around the same time you got into the arts and acting and theater and everything. So what can you say about that?
Well, it's not just one thing as a healer. I'm an energetic body healer and intuitive medium. And what that means is that there's three different layers of how I work, and one of them is the healing. And healing, on an energetic level, is utilizing the universal energy that we all have. We all can, you know, tap into if we choose to, but it's like playing a piano. We just, as a healer, you have more of an aptitude towards it, if you will. What is the, give me the exact question you're asking me. I'm sorry, because I'm looking at it and I'm seeing how many ways I can answer you. So please redirect that question for me.
When did you first discover you had this talent?
Okay. So when I was little, I was able to, I guess my first awareness was the ability of seeing people's energy and feeling their energy, so more on an empathic level, and feeling other people's pain, to telepathy of really hearing what other people were saying. And I do want to clarify that I'm not hearing voices in my head. I'm hearing what you're saying, but I'm hearing what you're truly saying on a different frequency, which translated in a young child's mind of really what you're saying. For example, if you said, oh, nice dress you have on, and I'm hearing you, oh, that dress is horrible looking. And so I would, that's how that frequency would translate to me as a young child. Also being able to see spirits. And when you have an ability and you're so young and you have no support system, you feel almost like, I'll speak for myself, I felt more like a misfit. Even though I belonged, as I got older, and, you know, I am very popular, very outgoing. Thank God I have a sense of humor. But having these abilities does put you on the sideline a little bit. because you see things other people don't see. And if people aren't seeing the same way you're seeing it, it does make you feel, like I said a moment ago, more like a misfit. But as I got older starting to understand myself more and more, it would not be till later on through my early 30s that I couldn't deny any longer my abilities, because they were growing and growing, and they kept on growing through my 20s.
And so it didn't come till later that you did sessions with people and things like that.
Yeah, my hands would start to vibrate, and I would go up to people, and because I didn't have any boundaries, I didn't have anybody showing me the way, and I would see somebody, and I may go up to that person and just give them a message, or I say, I can see that your back is really off. Would you like me to do some energy work on your lower back? And, you know, I would never do that today. If I had a child, I would have taught that child differently. But I didn't have anybody to tell me that, you know, listen, man, you don't just go up to people and tell them stuff, or you don't go up to them and say, by the way, would you like me to do some energy work on you? It was innate in me. It wasn't something that I really thought about. I knew it was just a part of me. I always thought that I would have been a parapsychologist if I hadn't been in the entertainment field. And then as I grew in my abilities and grew in life, I started to see it come out in many other ways. It came out in my private acting sessions early on, that every once in a while a loved one would show up, and not having a filter, sharing. And thank God the people that I did share with were received this very well, and understanding people's feelings. Like I would say to my students something, and they would say, oh my God, that's exactly what I was thinking, or that was exactly what I was feeling. And so again, not fully understanding your abilities until later on, and getting visions. I mean, I would walk in, I remember clearly in my early 20s walking into my bedroom and seeing seven crosses of Jesus and going, okay, and walking out. And, I was born Jewish, and so I didn't have any background in any other faith. So seeing seven crosses of Jesus was quite interesting, and not knowing that seven was God's number at that time. But as I was getting older, things started happening more and more and more until one day when I was, to jump the storyline, to where I was led to Sedona, which I did tell you earlier that story. Did I not?
I don't think you did.
Okay, I'll just kind of bring it into, it kind of brings it into full focus of this. After many years of running away from my abilities, there was a time where I was led to Sedona, Arizona. And while I was there, I had one of those Shirley MacLaine moments, where if those who remember, Shirley MacLaine had a spiritual awakening, where she wrote the book Out on the Limb. For me, going to Sedona was an eye-opening experience. It was something I had never intended to do, but was led there. And so my last night, or my last afternoon in the desert, I was looking around for a place to sit and meditate. And about, I want to say, an arm's length off my left shoulder, I heard a man's voice, and the voice said, "We will heal you so that you may heal others." And there was nobody in the desert with me. And I turned my head to the left and I said, "Hello?" And there was nobody there. And so at that point, it had gotten, the messages were coming very clear and very fast, that I decided that I was going to commit to this work. And I have. It's been over 17 years that I've committed to it. And it has brought magical things into my life, amazing human beings into my life. I have most of the clients that I see, believe it or not, are in the entertainment field. And then the other people that I see in New Jersey tend to be more regular people, from CEOs to just regular, you know, people, everyday people. And everyone is just so interesting. And it has brought – it enriches your life. Helping other people really does bring amazing things into your life. And once I had that experience and I came back, I decided to commit even deeper into the work. So I got a certification in clinical hypnotherapy, puzzle art therapy, Reiki master, and started to explore many different types of modalities and study with people like James Van Praagh and Russell Tark, who worked with the government, and so various people to really hone in and understand who I was in the world. And the abilities are always stretching. They're always moving. And I like to say I came out of the spiritual closet and I joined the two of my worlds together, the entertainment world with the healing intuitive mediumship work. And it is it really has been received very well. The clients that I come to me really are open. And believe it or not, a lot of men come to me, which is unusual, but a lot of men, they'll start out with, I don't believe in that, and next thing I know, they're in a session with me. So it is fantastic. It opens up so many more wonderful things in your life when you are when you do this type of work, and I embrace it. So when I say to you, I don't take myself seriously, but I do take my work seriously.
So how does, like, healing energy work exactly?
Well, because it's many different things. The intuitive, the clairvoyant. I'm a clairvoyant as well. So the healing is it's a layering of things. So can we redirect that question, because it's a huge question to ask, and that's going to take us in so many areas. So. How do I work?
Yeah, how does the energy healing that you do practice work?
Okay. All right. Well, there's many ways, but one of which, when the client comes to me, I look at their energy field. And if we're looking at what's throwing them off, I don't like a client to tell me anything when we first start working together, because I would like to know for myself. So I'm looking into your energy field and seeing what is stagnant, what is, for example, looking into your digestive tract and seeing that it's blocked. The energy is stagnant around you. You have energy wheels around you called chakras, and often they get wonky or out of place, and it throws your whole energy field off. And I can see that. So that's one aspect. And then through that, I can balance the energy. So that's one aspect. And then the layering of it is I'm also a clairvoyant. So I see visions as well. And with that, I look at whatever comes in. The vision may be layered, so the energy pushes me with the information to share with you. I've never had anybody come to me and say, I don't want to know what you're seeing, I just want you to heal me. I've never had anybody say that.
So you like see people's chakras, as you put it. You see it, like, visually see it, or is it something you kind of intuitively pick up on, or how does that work?
Well, I don't dissect it. I just kind of know innately, intuitively, what I'm seeing is what I'm seeing, and the visions what I see are accurate. I don't think, what I tell my clients, you don't want to know what I think. You only care about what I feel, because what happens is I move to the side and I allow the information to come through me. That's the best way for me to explain it. And so I'm observing it, but Yeah, yes, I'm the conduit and the information comes through me, but I see the vision and I share that information that comes through regarding that visual, as well as the energy and what is going on in your body. I'm not a doctor. Don't profess to be a doctor. I'm just talking about energy and moving the energy around. If you know, it's sometimes, let's see, let me give one here. Often I'll be able to see when the neck is out of alignment or someone has a headache, and that's happened several times. There was a doctor I was working with on a video, and we were just chatting, and I said to her, oh, here's my other life, and I gave her my card, and she said, will you work on me? I said, sure, when? She goes, now. So I did some energy work on her head, and she said, that's enough, I'm good. And she said, I had the worst headache. So she never told me that she had a headache. My hands just go where they need to go, and that's how I was able to help her alleviate that, you know.
And why do you think a lot of people in the entertainment industry are drawn to this, and you have a lot of clients in the entertainment industry?
Well, I think actors in general are very open, and so if they naturally gravitate, if they have this the feeling of direction, they're open to – they're very open. Actors are open in general. So having – you know, being directed or guided into the arts of tarot, if you will, or hypnosis – I mean, it just feels – it's very natural for actors, I feel. There's several actors over the years that have gone on. One of them, who is a wonderful actress, was led to do angel readings and connect with spirit guides and angel readings, and that's how she has set up her practice. But why actors are more drawn to – or people in the entertainment field drawn to what I do, I don't know, except that I think there's a trust level, and you know, that also draws people, you know, and word of mouth.
So, before we wrap up, what can you say about the stress levels and a way for people to cope with their stress levels in light of everything that's going on in the world right now?
Okay. Well, aside, I know a lot of us are in quarantine or self-quarantine, but also, there is some great theta music, meditative music on YouTube, and that's great to get you into a nice meditative state. Also, not watching television as a lullaby, but if you must have television on or radio on, I would suggest. If you have to have television on, then put it on a comedic station if you have to. But really, to lower your stress level, I would go to YouTube and put on some theta music that has or hypnosis meditations that will give you nice deep sleep. Let me give you some frequencies, if you will. They have on different types of frequencies that will provoke different types of relaxation. And I often will go to sleep with one of these sounds in the background, and it gives me nice deep sleep. I'm going to go ahead and pull up some of these suggestions. There's purple electric waves. It's relaxing. It's 427 Hz theta waves. They have literally hundreds of these types of relaxation. One that I use a lot in my session as a background is a powerful healing theta meditation, 528 Hz transformation, miracles, and DNA repair. So if your viewers go to YouTube, they can see many different types of these meditation sound waves, and helping you to relax while you're sleeping, so you have a good night's sleep. will also lower your stress level. Lowering your other ways to lower your stress level is to limit, if not eliminate, the news and negative talk. All these things, you know, sound like, well, I can't do that. Well, you can. If you feel like you have to watch the news, then limit your time. I would say this as an observation, pull back and observe how you're feeling if you were to eliminate negative talk and the news, if you will, for several days, and you'll start to take a note of how that's lowered your stress level. In my private sessions, I do exercises for my clients so they can walk away feeling much better, at least having a tool for them to work with. So those are just a few ideas and suggestions that I use myself, you know, because I still live on this planet and I still have to deal with interacting with people. But it's a great time to reconnect into reading a book. I mean, that is something that we have lost touch with reading. So, but those are just a few ways to lower your stress level. Once we acclimate back into the real world, then I would say if you can, and because the weather is getting warmer, is to go out in your backyard, take off your shoes, and allow your feet to stand on the earth, on the grass, not the cement, for at least 5-10 minutes if you can. And that'll also balance you and de-stress you. It sounds something like so simple, and it is. It's so simple. It's right there at your feet. We are in our, you know, that's, those are some ways to really lower your stress level. So there are many other ways, but those are just a few that your audience could take away with, you know, from today.
Yeah, and without, because I know you didn't want to get into politics or anything, but so without getting into politics, do you intuitively feel this is something humanity will get through and it will that there are better days to come?
There are absolutely better days to come. This is 2020 is a very high vibrational year, and going back to that that comment about you have to open the closet, clean out the closet, and put some stuff back and throw the other crap out. And so that's what is going on right now. There is, it's still a high vibrational year. It's still going to be amazing things ahead. I choose to live in the light of all possibilities and creativity. I have no doubt we're going to get through this. I just want to send out to your audience that we're all going to be okay. All of us are going to be okay. And I know this intuitively.
All right. Well, I think that's a good note to end on. Thank you for coming on and doing this show. And
Yeah.
It's
a show. Well, Sean, I mean, you know, sorry to interrupt you, but also if you wanted to add that I am seeing clients via Skype for energy readings while we're in this, you know, in this time period, and so if any of your audience is in need of a session, I am around and still doing them.
All right. Yeah. If anybody needs to consult you or anything, they can reach out to you on your website would be the best way, is what you're saying, right?
Yes, the website would probably be the best way to reach out to me.
All right, good. Yeah, and I remember in your class I did the Night of the Living Dead scene where everybody was kind of walling off the zombies. Now we're kind of in that situation, the real world, only we're walling off the coronavirus, not actual zombies walking around.
Yes. We're going to all be okay, Sean. That's really the bottom line. We're going to be okay. We're all going to be okay. And yes, it's true that some people have passed, but that was their time period. But the majority of us, you know, life goes on, and we are going to be fine. We're going to be fine as a world. We're going to be fine as a country. And I know that in my heart of hearts.
You're listening to BSing with Sean Kay on Radio Free Brooklyn, independent listener-supported radio. That was the conversation, and I hope you enjoyed it. And I'm glad that we ended on a positive note, despite the dark times humanity is facing right now. And regardless of your spiritual beliefs, I hope that or spiritual or religious or lack, if you're an atheist, I hope you appreciated that message of how, you know, we're going to get through this. And I believe we will get through this. It will be a hard time, but humanity will get through this. But this is preparation for the real apocalypse when we go to war with artificial intelligence. We're going to have a Terminator-like war against robots, and I think that's going to be humanity's biggest challenge, even bigger than this. It might not be that dramatic, but I do think artificial intelligence is going to start playing a much bigger role in our lives in the years to come. But I'm getting a bit off track here, which is always fun, and that's a conversation for another time. Before we wrap up, I have some important announcements to make about Radio Free Brooklyn. If you'd like to listen to Radio Free Brooklyn when you're not in front of your computer, please consider downloading our free mobile app for iPhone and Android, available in the App Store or the Google Play Store for Android. I highly recommend this app. I listen to Radio Free Brooklyn like when I go for a run or when I'm doing things around the house. There's a lot of interesting shows on there besides BSing with Sean K, so I highly recommend listening to the other content on there. Please be sure to subscribe to our monthly newsletter for the latest news about new programming and upcoming Radio Free Brooklyn events. You can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter. Now, I'm going to talk about our Drive to 5 fundraiser. Radio Free Brooklyn's Drive to 5 fundraising campaign is underway. In May, Radio Free Brooklyn turns 5 years old, and we need to raise $25,000 so we can continue bringing you BSing with Sean K and our other great programming for another 5 years. We're only about 30% there, so we have a long way to go in just a couple of months. If we're unable to reach our goal, it may be adios, amigos, to this show and dozens of others. If you'd like to make a small monthly donation to help us reach our goal, the easiest way to give is to text RFBGive5, the number 5, to 44321, and you can make a pledge right on your phone. We also have some great gifts for giving available on our website, including a limited edition 5-year t-shirts designed by former Clash manager Cosmo Vinyl. You might even be able to get a free one if you complete our monthly challenge. If you'd like to get one of these great premiums, you can make your donation at radiofreebrooklyn.org/drive-to-5. If you can't afford to give, you can still let us know how much you love us by calling our special voicemail at 718-673-8201 and leave us a message letting us know why you love Radio Free Brooklyn or to wish us a happy birthday. If you consent, your message may be played on the air, because, you know, everybody loves to be loved, and we as a station love to be loved, and there's just not enough love in the world, so spread the love around. Thank you for listening to BSing with Sean K on Radio Free Brooklyn. Your support keeps this station going, and tune in next Monday morning / late Sunday night at 1 a.m. for another episode of BSing with Sean K, and also you can listen to my episodes on Spotify and iTunes. That's about it, and I'll catch you on the next one.